Nothing wrong with being early. Okay. So our next bill for this afternoon for consideration is Senate File 13. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 13 from the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure, amending the method of execution of a death sentence, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee No. 1 Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 13, Method of Execution-1, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, and Pinnell. Those who voted no, Representatives Baker, Esquivel, Pelkey, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole raises a report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 13 do pass, and Representative Pinnell will explain the bill.
Representative Pinnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill is pretty short and to the point, and it pretty much explains itself, and it's about another form of execution. And it goes through the bill, and I won't read it. I'd probably be here to answer any questions if possible. But it does basically, in the absence of the lethal injection, which Wyoming currently allows as the sentence, in that absence, this would be another form that could be utilized and used, in the absence of the lethal injection. So I believe there was an amendment to this. That
are you done with the explanation then, Representative Pinnell?
Yeah, it's pretty self-explanatory.
Thank you. We do have a committee of a whole amendment, Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Folks, I bring to you, and I'd move the approval of Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 to Senate File 13. You know, I bring this amendment because the concept of us, the modern man, does not have a way to do the ultimate deed without a firing squad doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And it's inhumane on its face, and I'm going, well, at least we ought to have that person not be conscious at the time when it happens. So this amendment just says that if you use the proper anesthetics, then he'll be out and he'll be sound asleep before you pull the trigger. So I would move the bill, the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment, Representative Winters.
Mr. Chairman, I rise in support of this amendment. I think it's very good. There was a question that I raised in committee on this subject, and of course, with some reinterpretation, I found it also on the front page of one of the papers. But anyway, what we're looking at here is the question of pain and that sort of thing. I think that should be the primary concern. And so in this particular case, I believe that this goes a long way to alleviating my concerns, and I appreciate the amendment.
Question being called. We're on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 on Senate File 13. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Chairs in doubt, those in favor, please stand. The amendment does pass. We're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have just a couple of questions.
first of all, well, I guess three questions. One, how many people are on death row in Wyoming right now? Two, how many executions have we had in the state of Wyoming in the last 50 years? And three, when was the last time in the country that someone was executed by firing squad? And how many times in the last 20 years has anybody been executed by the firing squad in the U.S.?
Representative Escobar.
Is it on? Oh, okay. I guess on the last question, unless the presenter wants to answer it, no one's on death row in Wyoming currently, and the last one that was had his execution stayed. The last firing squad execution was in 1978, and that was at the request of the prisoner. It wasn't at the request of the state. But there's probably no need for this bill. There's nobody on death row. We don't know what's going to happen with the lethal injection. You know, maybe next year they'll change their mind. They're European drugs. So right now no states can get them. So I was adamantly opposed to the bill. As far as being unconscious and do you feel pain, I guess that's for the body to decide, but I know how's that any different than when you're asleep at night and your wife rolls over and kicks you in the side? Do you feel that? So. It's just not needed right now. Nobody on death row. Just one of those bills when it's warm fuzzy, I guess, but standing in front of a firing squad doesn't sound very warm and fuzzy to me. I'm a no.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make two brief arguments against the bill. One is, you know, I'm opposed to the bill because I'm opposed to the death penalty. That's an argument in my mind. But secondly, the logical argument against this bill in my mind is that when this bill was first proposed, the state was in a situation where the one inmate that we had on death row was nearing the end of his ability to appeal the process. And that's been eliminated. That individual is probably going to go through another hearing phase where he's going to be resentenced, and it resets the timeline for his appeals. So this bill, the urgency of this bill is no longer needed. Secondly, if you'll recall, we had a House bill that's over in the Senate now, House Bill 49, that addressed the issue of obtaining these drugs. House Bill 49 made it confidential. So the big issue is you have these European pharmaceutical companies providing these drugs to us, and they didn't want to do it on the basis that they'd face public pressure because the public would know who they were. Now we've addressed that with the confidentiality, and that bill will probably move forward, and I think it'll address what we've had as concerns here, that we'll be able to obtain these drugs. Remember, this is a firing squad is going to be the secondary option if we can't obtain the drugs for lethal injection. Well, we should be able to obtain them now in theory. I mean, that's the whole reason and the whole argument for that other bill was let's keep these providers confidential and so we can obtain these drugs. So on and against the bill.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Chairman. On and for the bill, I believe that the one thing that this body needs to remember, and everybody seems to lose sight of, is those that are the victims in this cause of this man or woman being put to death. It was a heinous crime, or they wouldn't be on that death row, and you need to remember why they're there. Thank you.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to remind you all that this isn't the death penalty bill. There was an earlier bill. We have the death penalty. This bill, all it does on lines 13 through 15, adds a possible execution by firing squad. Or if the sentencing court finds execution by lethal injection cannot be performed within the time prescribed by law, this is an alternative method that's there. And we've made it as painless as possible for the perpetrator of these heinous crimes with the Committee of the Whole Amendment. So, again, this isn't about whether we're going to have the death penalty or not. We have the death penalty here in Wyoming. To answer one of the earlier questions, I believe the last death penalty case where it was performed in Wyoming was 1992. As far as the firing squad, I believe Utah, and I don't know what year that was, that may have been the late 70s that someone mentioned earlier, but Utah had the death or the firing squad for the death penalty.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to further expand on that last answer, since the question was asked, the last death in the United States performed by firing squad was in 1976 in Utah, and currently Utah and Oklahoma have firing squad still as a means of execution on their books.
Mr. Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I doing some very brief, quick research. My sources said that it was the Beehive State, but that it was actually as recently as 2010. But that was what I saw, so I don't know.
Representative Eklund.
A question I've got is if a person were on death row and they had a scheduled execution and they requested a death by firing squad, presently, without this bill, could we do that?
Representative Pinnell.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The way the bill reads, this is only used in the absence that the lethal injection is not available. I'm not, I can't say for sure if it would be, that would be determined down the road. But right now, the way the bill reads, if a lethal injection is not available. And also an answer to another question that asked if anybody was on death row. Currently in Wyoming, no, but there is a case now pending, from what I understand, that is going to go back to the sentencing phase on an individual here that's going to request the death penalty.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole arise and report to, yet do so with recommendation that Senate File 13 do pass. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The bill passes Committee of the Whole. Division. Those in favor of the bill, please stand. As I was saying, Senate File 13 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration will be Senate File 5. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 5 from the Travel Committee, an act relating to state historic sites, accepting transfer of land for Quebec One Missile Alert Facility State Historic Site, providing for administration of the historic site as a seasonal facility, requiring a report, providing appropriations, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 5, engrossed, Quebec 1 Historic Site 3 respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Clem, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz, and Steinmetz, signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman, further reviewed by Committee Number 2 Appropriations, who respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Conley, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Petroff, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 5 do pass. And I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. The amendment simply changes on page 2, line 11, tourist attraction to historic site, which makes it consistent with the rest of the bill. And also the committee just really likes conference committees. So I encourage your aye vote.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I move the explanation of the bill to Representative Freeman.
Representative Freeman, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today we have an opportunity to save part of our nation's and actually the world's military history. And it only happened in Wyoming, so it's Wyoming military history, too. 2 years ago, the U.S. military asked our state if we would want to take possession of the Quebec One Missile Alert Facility. The facility commanded the MX missile system, also known as the Peacekeepers. This is the most sophisticated system in the world. Before I go too much further, there is on my desk, but in your box, there is a handout that has, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. A flyer that you can go along with me. But anyway, the MX missile system The Peacekeeper was credited with ending the Cold War. It's the most sophisticated missile system in the world, and the MX was only deployed in Wyoming. With the START 2 treaty, basically those missiles went away, and what we're able to do is to preserve the command site. What the state parks and Cultural Resource Commission did is they did a study, and that's also on my desk and about 3 inches thick, about the site. The site is about 5 acres in area. It's literally hundreds of yards off the interstate, Interstate 25. And the Air Force will deliver this site to us turnkey, just like it was when it was decommissioned in, I believe, 2005. When the Parks and Cultural Resource Commission went through there, it scored very high. And they thought it was a very good idea to add that to our historical treasures. Nuclear tourism is one of the fastest growing areas or historical tourism in our country. Those of you who went through school about the same time that I did probably remember duck and cover, remember being sent home in case there was a nuclear attack, and the absolute fear that we had that there was going to be nuclear war in the United States. There are other nuclear sites around the country. There is one up close to the Badlands where it's off the beaten path. You go to
a visitor centers, you get onto a bus, and then you go to a site similar, and they had 80,000 visitors last year. We expect at least 40,000 visitors. I think that that's a very low portion to it, but it will fit into nuclear tourism byways. They can start to the state to the south and then go on up to the Badlands. The other thing that this does is Wyoming has always had a strong military history, going from the forts on the Platte River to the famous fort by the famous trapper in the southwest Wyoming. If I can go through the bill with you, I'll kind of show you what the bill does. Okay, we'll start on page 2, and if you look at the first section of it, it authorizes the Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources, in consultation with the governor and the attorney general, to lease the Quebec site. You'll see why a lease becomes a little more important in Section B, where an environmental-based survey is done. Several of these ICBM sites have had some environmental problems. It's primarily with the Atlas system, which was totally different than the Missile Keeper. They did maintenance on sites of these places, and there was some bugs that were left in the soil. So anyway, before there is any lease to the state, there'll be the environmental survey. And then when that survey is done, it will be reported to the Joint Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Interim Committee. If you go on to see the D, the governor determines if it is in the best interest, based on the reports that we've gotten, whether the state should take ownership or lease the Quebec One site. And the governor is authorized to negotiate the terms of the transfer. The second, or the towards the end of, this is on page 3, lines 14 through 15, the Air Force or any other appropriate appropriate agency to retain liability for all environmental closure and reclamations remains with the federal government. So we're protecting our state from that point. If you go on to page 4, we're into administration. And the Department of State's Parks and Cultural Resources authorized to administer, operate, and maintain this historical site in accordance with the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966. If you go down to Section 2, there is an appropriation. The appropriation is a one-time expense of $165,000. And if you go to lines 21 and 22, you see that it's roads, landscaping, parking areas, and other similar and necessary improvements. The building, as it currently stands, is almost ADA compliant. One of the things that they will have to do is make a decision on whether or not that they will take handicapped people down into the site. Because if you do, then we would have to put a 12-hour area to help those people. If you turn on to page 5, there's a $10,000 appropriation there, and that's basically for housekeeping. That's for the lawnmowers, the ladders, and all those other wonderful things that you don't think will cost that much. If you notice, on also on page 5, that this is June 30th, 2019. If we pass this bill, what happens is that gives the authorization for the department to start to negotiate in good faith to take ownership of this. With the environmental studies and other government transfer of lands, this is not going to take place anytime soon, so this money is going to stay in the coffee can for a while to where we can get to the point that we're at. In this appropriation, there's no funding for staff. When that happens, they have two options to do that. They can make it a satellite historical site to where that they operate it with seasonal employees, or they can have one full-time person and three seasonals. As they start to put this together, they'll know what would be most appropriate. The bottom line is with the study that they have, they believe that this will be a self-sustaining site. I've already talked about that their numbers are based on numbers of about half of what is happening in other states that don't have the interstate access. We will benefit from having this nuclear tourism movement grow while we're getting our site going, and it'll be a site that will be affordable. We're looking at a $5 fee to get in, less for everybody else. With that, I think I've hit the high points of the bill, and I'm ready for your questions.
Thank you, Representative Pelkey.
Just one question. When the inevitable collapse comes, can we use this in strategic coordination with our aircraft carrier?
Mr. Chairman?
Feel better?
I believe so. It depends on where we deploy the aircraft carrier.
Representative Swartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I had the privilege of taking a tour today of the site, and I can say without doubt that accepting possibly voting on the roadkill bill, that tour was the highlight of the session so far for me. It was a wonderful tour, and if I did have doubts prior to the tour about whether I would be in support of this bill. There's obviously issues about funding and management of the site, but in terms of historical significance, I think it is well worth preserving, and we need to support this bill in order to do so. Thank you very much.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, want to add my enthusiastic support to this bill. A year and a half ago, I had the opportunity to tour the facility because it's actually located in my district, so I do get first dibs just in case. But in addition to pointing out that for most of us, it's part of our history as baby boomers, I also want to say that anyone who is 24 years old or younger, they have no idea. People who are 24 or younger were not alive during the Cold War. And if they just read about it in a book, it doesn't mean anything. And I know when I was teaching school, these young kids, the country that sent up Sputnik and all that, it's all just one big blur. And, folks, we would be missing an awesome opportunity if we pass on this bill. I strongly support it.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the Grand Canyon State, southern part of the Grand Canyon State, there's a Titan missile site that I've toured several times. My parents used to be snowbirds down in that part of the area. Very informative, great site. And I think this is something we need to support and put this with our state parks. It's part of our history. Let's preserve it. Thank you.
Representative Eklund.
Well, I've got a question that's we haven't discussed in this. When the missile sites were first put in, the command centers and whatnot, they negotiated easements with the landowners, and you had cables down your line and and missile bases, and most landowners, I would guess, agreed to it one way or another. But I don't think anywhere in that agreement was the idea that their ranch would maybe have centered in it a tourist site. And I'm curious what work has been done to with the landowners where the site is located. Are they included in the study? Do we have any idea what effect it has on the ranching operation? Previously, they'd have a few trucks come in and out with the crew that would be at various centers, and now they might have quite an influx of people running right through a cattle operation. I haven't been out there, so I don't know how far it is off the beaten track or if it's just right on the interstate or what it is. I'd like a little bit of information about that, whether or not the study would evaluate the impact on the people who have kind of bore the brunt of having this on their place. Thank you.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions. On page 3, we discuss, in section C, we discuss the appropriate agency retaining the liability. You know, other organizations or groups in the state of Wyoming that have environmental concerns, such as drilling or mining and such, are required to post bonds. Was there any discussion about requiring the federal government or that agency within the federal government to post a bond to guarantee their liability position? And then also on the appropriation, was there any discussion about in part of the negotiation convincing that agency to pay for those improvements so that we didn't have to out of general funds? To me, it seems that would be far cheaper for them to pay for those improvements than trying to close it and clean it up. So I would just wonder if any of those were brought up.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Chairman, to address the questions that were given to the by the not the previous speaker, but the one before that, is that I think the local people are kind of excited about this happening. We've been told that there is the access is not an issue. There is a maintenance shed that's on the site in the local area is asking whether or not that they can make that into a fire station. Only from memory is that the adjacent landowner is in that area, and we were told in committee that he participated in the study. So I believe that the state has addressed those concerns. On the issue of the liability for environmental closure and reclamation, I don't know if a bond would be required. I think it depends on what they find. So to jump that gun, that would be something that the governor is authorized to look into, to make a lease agreement or make the decision to purchase the property. As for the having the federal government or the Air Force to put the parking lots, the landscaping, and those kind of things, they are, I guess what I'm thinking of is it's going to be our site. We want to make sure that we know what it looks like. We want to have it to be functional for our uses of the property. There was many references that people want to get involved in this project. There was a big land-owning oil company that said this is a project that we would like to become involved in because it's the citizen corporate thing to do. So I think that we will have great cooperation from the public sector.
Mr. Minority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm 26, not quite 27, and officially the Cold War hadn't ended by the time I was born, but I don't remember it. I don't remember living through that time, but I think that for all of us, if we were not living in that time, or that we don't remember that time, if we were too little, that there are often times that these things seem like ancient history to us. I mean, I'm sure there are many members of this body who were born in the closing days or shortly after the end of the Second World War who don't remember living through any of those events, but they may seem like ancient history to you. And so, me being having a great interest in history, I think that it's vitally important that these kinds of facilities, these kinds of landmarks, be preserved, because they're reminiscent of a different time and a different era that wasn't really all that long ago, and yet these were things that shaped the world and formed it into what we live in today. And you know, I think that we're in a lot different world than we were just 25, 30 years ago, and already that's that era and that society that was built around, and how people went about their day-to-day lives with the ever-present uncertainty that at any time the horizon might light up with a giant mushroom cloud. You know, I think that if we start forgetting that, then it sounds a little cliche, but history may be doomed to repeat itself. So I didn't get a chance to go out and tour the facility this morning, but I believe strongly in the preservation of facilities like this and of history in general, so I'm in favor of the bill.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So a couple of questions that I heard, and I'm not sure if they got answered or not, but the facility itself is only about 200 yards off of the off of I-25. The appropriation is for signage and visitor services. The working agreement that we're going on so far is that the military would provide a turnkey facility. They would do all of the improvements to get it ready for, you know, all the ADA improvements, all of the putting the equipment back where it belongs, all of the cleanup and that sort of thing. And again, any of the environmental concerns would be handled by them. And there really aren't any environmental concerns that we're aware of. There would be an in-depth study to make sure, but the missiles were not located, you know, actually on that site. So hope that answers any questions.
Chairman Miller.
You know, I'm on in support of this. I'm just wondering if there was any discussion if somehow we could get this into a private sector group or organization that doesn't require state money each year as we go forward. Let them run it. Let them pay for it by admission fees or whatever. You know, I just don't like the state, you know, doing all this. And was that discussion held? I assume it had to come up somewhere.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of just keeps happening and happening and happening. I think those of us have been here, we go back to Camp Guernsey, we go back to the LBRS Ranch up by Recluse, clear out in the middle of nowhere that we really haven't done anything with. We have, I guess I can say this, Camp Douglas, and then there's one in number one in your license plate and heart. There's a military base there that we're looking at. So we just keep doing these things, and this agency keeps coming back and saying, this is a great opportunity for us, this is a great opportunity for us. And I think I've toured this, been there. It is a historic place. It's really neat to go down in there. And those folks lived down there, and I think they stayed in there for 7 days straight, enclosed. They didn't leave. It was, and the guy that gave us the tour was one of the guys that was down in there that actually lived the part. But I just continue to be concerned of us taking over things. The last speaker talked about private enterprise, private donations being part of this. And this agency just keeps coming back, and this is an opportunity that we can't pass up. We keep taking these opportunities that we can't pass up, and this very well might be another one of those. But I have some concern with that. I hope some of you remember that, and this site is unique, and as been pointed out, it's a historic thing. So I'm really in the middle on this one. Thank you.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Chairman, as I was handed the notes for the floor manager on the west side of the building, there was talk of concessionaires and those kind of discussions. And from what I gather, their decision was it would be better if the state took control and interpreted the site. One of the things that struck me when we talked about it in appropriations this morning, I believe, was that the Air Force talked about who should interpret the site. And the person that was representing the Air Force says, I don't think that we should. I think that the state should, because then they will bring multiple perspectives of what that history came from. There was a woman that testified yesterday morning or afternoon, whenever we heard it, and she was against the nuclear deployment of the MX missile, and you know, she brings a unique perspective, and if the state doesn't do it, I don't think that it will be done. And they didn't make the decision lightly. They did their due diligence.
Any other discussion?
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Petros' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 5 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Senate File 5 has passed Committee of the Whole, and our next bill for consideration is Senate File 26. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 26 from the Minerals Committee, an act relating to economic development, amending the interest rate charged under the Wyoming Partnership Challenge Loan Program, amending maximum authorized loan amounts as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred Senate File 26, Challenge Loan Interest Rate, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Gay, Kasparik, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, Walters, one no vote, Representative Edmonds, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman. And
you've heard the reading of the bill, Chairman Lockhart. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 26 do pass. There are no amendments, and I'll turn the explanation of the bill, which was an interim bill for the Minerals Committee, over to the good Vice Chair of Minerals in the House side.
Representative Kasparik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 26 is related to the Challenge Loan Program, and it does three things. It increases the maximum amount of bridge financing component from $500,000 to $1 million. It increases the maximum for participating in a local lender with a local lender from $1 million to $2 million. And the third thing it does is it decreases the interest rate from 4% to no less than 3%. And it brings these numbers more in line with what's happening in our market today. And just to quickly go through the bill, It's amending some language, net language that's amended begins on page 2, where you can see the change from 500,000 to 1 million. And then in little Romanet 7, the maximum participation of 50% of the loan and increases the amount from 1 million to 2 million. Section 912.302 deals with the change in the interest rate, and that's on line 4 and 5 of page 3. And section 912.304 continues the language of the changes in the maximum amounts and carries it through for the criteria for the loans which hasn't changed. If there are no questions on the bill, I would call for the question, but I'll stand for questions.
Any comments on the bill?
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 26 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, if any?
No.
Senate File 26 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration will be Senate File 32. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 32 from the Labor Committee, an act relating to small employer health insurance availability, providing that dependent coverage shall be optional and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, of Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 32, Small Employer Group Health Insurance, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Kasparic, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson. One no vote, Representative Edmonds. One excuse, Representative Harvey. Signed by Representative Larson, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Harvey, what is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 32 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would like to pass the explanation of the bill over to the man from the large mountain area.
Representative Schwartz, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 32 is a bill that deals with availability of coverage under the Small Employer Group Health Insurance article. And I hesitate to say this, but it's a very simple change. The current language states that if a small employer carrier offers coverage to a small employer, such as myself, it shall offer coverage to all of the eligible employees and their dependents. The change in language is that it may offer coverage to their dependents. And the rationale behind this change is that based on federal regulations in place, if that spouse is offered the coverage as written now, they would be unable to obtain less costly coverage via the marketplace. That's the very simple explanation of the bill. If you look at the fiscal note, there is no fiscal or personnel impact. So this is an opportunity to provide a benefit to the citizens of Wyoming at no cost to us. And on that note, I will be happy to take questions.
Representative, can't remember his name. Identify yourself.
Clem, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clem, my apologies. I'm brain dead right now. Thank you.
Oh, no
Representative
worries,
Clem.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I'm reading here page 1, line 14. If a small employer carrier. Okay, never mind. I think I got it. I just wasn't sure he said a small employer carrier offers small or coverage to a small employer. I just wasn't sure if he was referring to his stature or if he was referring to something else. So I got it taken care of, though. Thank you.
Representative Clem. Any other comments on the bill, wise or otherwise?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you. I believe that small does not necessarily have a negative connotation. Thank you very much.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hesitate now to speak. The amendment of the bill says that they may offer coverage to their dependents. I find it kind of curious if you've thought through the business of the insurance of a dependent that has a pre-existing condition, and the way that you the proposal is says that it may the may then provides an out for a carrier to look at the conditions of the dependencies that may be in the family and either they provide the opportunity of an exclusion, which they normally won't do, but they may very well refuse the contract under those conditions. So my thought is that if this is good, and I think probably it is, that maybe we ought to change the may to a shall.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was a really good question. Under the new federal guidelines, there are no pre-existing conditions. You cannot be denied coverage for pre-existing conditions. Let me give you a scenario of how this change in language would help. So, Joe Schmo works for John's Welding. John is a small employer, and he says, Joe, I will pay your insurance, and you can pay for your wife's insurance, but I can't afford to. So Joe Schmo is just really excited, and he says, okay, we'll do it. But the premium is $900, and his wages can't make up that difference. So then Joe's wife goes on to the marketplace to buy insurance. Because we say shall, she is not eligible to buy on the marketplace. Therefore, she is not eligible for any of the federal assistance in being able to get insured. So what is happening is people are going uninsured. So what just that one change in the word shall to may enables people to be insured that were not insured before.
Any other discussion? Question being called, all those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises. Whoa. My apologies, Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a brief explanation is on and against the bill. It would open up the option to buy cheaper insurance from our friends in Washington. My concern is it wouldn't be cheaper next year or the year after that. And that's why I'm against this change. Thank you.
Further comments? Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let's be clear, folks. Employers have the option of offering all of their employees insurance or none of their employees insurance. Under current statute, if they offer all of their employees insurance, they also have to offer to all of their dependents. Ladies and gentlemen, we're trying to give people the option as employers, private industry, the option to say we can cover our employees, but we're not obligated to also cover our employees' dependents. That is the difference here. Right now, it's all or nothing, both employees and dependents, and we're giving the option, all or nothing employees, but the dependents is optional. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further discussion on the bill? We'll try the question again. Question being called, those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 32 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, if any. Senate File 32 is passed Committee of the Whole. Madam Majority, floor leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the Easy. You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The motion carries.
Reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, committee of the whole having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate file 22, recommended do pass. Senate file 53, recommended do pass. Senate file 49, recommended do pass. Senate file 16, amended. Recommended do pass. Representative Berger moved that the House rise and sit again. Senate file 13, amended. Recommended do pass. Senate file 5, amended. Recommended do pass. Senate file 26, recommended do pass. Senate file 32, recommended do pass. Signed by Representative Larson, Chairman.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Speaker, I humbly move the adoption of the committee of whole report.
You've heard the humble motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, message number 209. The bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 124, Sales and Use Tax Enforcement, ayes 30, no 0, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 210. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 130, Lottery Commission Reporting Requirements, ayes 30, no 0, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 211. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 133, Bighorn Sheep Relocation, ayes 26, no 4, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 212. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 144, Microbreweries Minimum Barrel Requirement. Ayes 30, no 0, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 213. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 95, Speed Limits. Ayes 26, no 4, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 214. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file 115, Discrimination, ayes 24, no 6, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 215. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file 116, Legislature Compensation, ayes 23, no 7, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate file 38, Controlled Substances, First Offense for Possession, respectfully reports sent back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Croker, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate file 20, School Finance Excess Mill Levy Rebate, respectfully reports sent back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate file 64, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act Extension, respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate file 37, State Protection of Data Privacy, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred Senate File 45, Digital Information Privacy Task Force Reappropriation, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 33, Precinct Committee Person Elections, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danswanitzer, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman.
Re-referrals. Chairman Swanister Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to re-refer Senate File 45 to your Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Senate File 45 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Committee announcements. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room H18 to consider four Senate files. Senate File 23, Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission Amendments. Senate File 24, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority Amendments. Senate File 25, Cease and Transfer Priority List, and Senate File 34, Interstate Mining Compact Commission Membership. And I did misspeak earlier when I said there was going to be a meeting tomorrow morning of Thursday morning in Minerals, and that was an error.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting tomorrow morning, Wednesday, February 11th at 9 a.m. in room H10 to consider Senate File 63, Predator Ownership, and Senate File 6, Aquatic Invasive Species.
Vice Chairman Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, will meet today, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room H17 to consider the following bills. Senate File 30, Camp Guernsey Range Management Fund. Senate File 27, Vietnam Veterans Welcome Home Highway. Senate File 81, Kevin's Law.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 10 will meet tomorrow, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room H17. To consider the following bills, Senate File 31, Department of Health Reports Cleanup, Senate File 102, Engrossed Medical Billing Provisional Providers.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, February 11th at 9 a.m. in room 204 to hear committee bills, Senate File 60, Deferred Compensation Plan Automatic Enrollment, and Senate Joint Resolution 2, Engrossed Investment of State Funds. Thank you.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your House Committee Number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow, Wednesday, room H10, and consider Senate File 10, Education Administration.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem, I think that clears the deck.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Speaker. A couple of announcements first. The Capital Commission Bible study that's typically held on Wednesdays will not be held tomorrow because of the governor's prayer breakfast, so plan on that instead. I wanted to remind everybody that has budget amendments into LSO, please go and check in with them and make sure that you've signed off on them so that they can be numbered. Anything we can do to ease their burden when we come to 5 o'clock on Thursday is a good thing. And then your general file for tomorrow, It will be Senate File 20, Senate File 37, and Senate File 64. And, Mr. Speaker, with that, I would move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February 11th.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're adjourned until 10 a.m.